MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. I am Dr. Mike. You're listening to Code Delicious on Radio MD. Make sure to head over to RadioMD.com and subscribe so you get all the podcasts. And also head over to CardioChef.com, my personal website, where you can see what I'm up to and when I'll be in your neighborhood. Today, I'm very excited. It's all about sausages. My first guest is Tonya Reinhardt. She's director of the Coordinated Program in Dietetics and a senior lecturer at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. She's also the course director for clinical nutrition at the School of Medicine at Wayne State and adjunct faculty in nutrition, of course, at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Dentistry. She's a fellow of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. She served on the Governor's Expert Committee on Childhood Obesity and is a past president of the Michigan Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Tonya, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Dr. Mike.
I want to get right into it because I think everyone, and I certainly am no exception, gets excited about meat in tubular form. So how did you, as a nutritionist of all folks, come around to enjoying and finding nutritional value in the humble sausage?
Okay. Well, it started with my husband having been diagnosed with some food sensitivities. And so when I sent him to a specialist, you know, they came up with a long laundry list of things, compounds that he shouldn't consume. Well, you know, a lot of the products that I was purchasing, you know, some of those gourmet healthy chicken sausages and so forth, when you read the label, it's like, wow, okay, he can't have that. Oh, he can't have this. So it kind of started that way. And then I was chatting with my son, who happens to work with a chef at a specialty meat place where they make sausage. And he said, well, you know, it's pretty easy to make sausage, and you can put in whatever you want and leave out whatever you want. So then we kind of kicked around the idea of maybe doing a book together. So that's really how the whole thing started. And honestly, when I was a kid, I watched my mom and dad, you know, they both came over from Italy, make sausage. So I thought to myself, yeah, let's do some of this and let's make some interesting ones. Like we can do chicken, we can do turkey, we can do vegetarian, we can do anything, you know. So that's how
well,
it started.
And that's a, you really touch on a sort of a long history, no matter sort of which civilization you go to. And that's kind of a passion of mine. My new book coming out, folks, if you want to head over to Amazon.com and pre-order it while it's on discount, Ancient Eats, looks at the food in ancient cultures where folks were obviously healthy and able to accomplish a lot. And really what's amazing is no matter where you go on the globe in the history of food, which is the history of people, they're making sausages out of something.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, though, too, because, you know, I always thought, gee, the Romans, you know, Italy invented the sausage. Well, not exactly. Probably the Romans swiped the recipes from somebody else. But they did bring it to sort of an art form, I think, in my opinion. But it was fascinating to learn the history of how each country, each society pretty much added their own touch or did something special to kind of make their own specific sausage. And that's what I found really fascinating.
Well, you know, as a dietitian, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't address this, certainly there's a lot of information in the news, particularly regarding meats, red meats, et cetera, and the consumption of such. And you know, some of the data that's come out suggests that if folks eat highly processed red meats, of which in the industrial sort of mass-produced sausage is a member, that can be associated with worse health outcomes in terms of cardiovascular disease, cancer, et cetera. So folks, you know, I think have a conception, and some of this is the spin of the news, that things like sausages are not healthy. So can you address that for our listeners? Because I think there's a whole lot of valuable information that is in that chapter in your book, which folks, if you're interested at all, not just in sausage making, but in learning about the science behind sausages and helpful sausages, you want The Complete Art and Science of Sausage Making by Tonya.
Okay, so to me, you really have to look at the components of a sausage because, again, you can pretty much stuff anything you want into a casing. So it starts with, I think, the whole idea of, is saturated fat bad for you? Because most often people eat sausages that are made out of pork or beef. Okay, so that's kind of the starting point. And I think the way I look at it is, I'll just be honest, I'm not a big meat eater just because that's my preference. But I get really annoyed with dietitians and physicians who say the only healthy diet is a vegan diet. Well, it's like, excuse me, that's not really evidence-based. Let's look at the actual evidence. So it seems to me that there are benefits of a variety of foods, and it's all about moderation. So that was the first thing, and really, if you look at the research on saturated fat, it's getting quite cloudy, quite controversial. It's almost, to me, I think the most compelling evidence is that what are you going to replace that saturated fat with? If you're going to put carbohydrates, which most people do, then you're probably worse off relative to some of the things you talked about, inflammation and so forth. So that was one of the first things I wanted to address. Then I think the second thing really is nitrites, that whole area. Nitrites and nitrates, which, by the way, you don't need to put that into fresh sausage. Now, however, if you buy sausage at the store, commercial products, it's definitely in there. But I read some very compelling research about how actually, if you look at the relative risk of those compounds in a diet compared to the potential benefit, because as a cardiologist, you probably know nitric oxide is really important for vasodilation. They actually looked at it from that standpoint. Well, okay, here might be a risk relative to, I don't know, colorectal cancer, maybe on the order of 15% relative risk. But what kind of benefit are you going to get relative to nitric oxide? So, again, it was another fascinating.
Yeah, and that is, and folks, if you head to the blog, if you pull up my post from, I wrote about this about a year or two ago, and I just lectured actually on it, and this whole nitrate, I call it a nitrate mythos, is a passion of mine to set the record straight. So, please jump in at any point, but I think some of the pertinent things that folks have to realize with nitrates and nitrites is that we've heard for years, oh, it's the nitrites in the sausage that give you cancer if you eat too many of them. Well, if we look, as you said, at the evidence, what we find is that this is based on research in the 70s when the amounts of nitrates and nitrites that were put into the animals and from which these conclusions were drawn, you'd have to eat something on the order of like 400 to 700 pounds of bacon at a single sitting to get that much of the compounds. The second is that there is a nitrate pathway with the gut microbiome, which obviously starts in the mouth, where we take those compounds and, as you said, we turn them into the very important nitric oxide. So this idea that you're eating the nitrates and the nitrites, you know, that you get from a little bit of the preservation that's used in these meat products and it's causing cancer, I think is way, way overblown, not based in the evidence. And quite frankly, when we look at where the dietary sources of nitrates and nitrites come from, over 90% come from vegetables like celery and beets. And I don't know one nutritionist, physician, or anyone who's saying, God, we've got to stop people from eating beets.
Oh, I know. You know, we had our state conferences, so a bunch of dietitians getting together, and we brought in this fantastic speaker who's, she works with sports teams on the national level, international too. And that's what they're feeding their athletes because they see improved performance, probably because of this vasodilation effect. So they're seeing improved performance by giving them these beets and beet extracts. Well, the whole point of that is exactly to deliver what you're talking about. Yeah. So we're on the same page.
and folks, too, one thing I want to point out is when you go to the health food store and you'll see these, they often call them uncured, you know, bacon, sausage, etc. Don't be fooled. Now, because of the way the regulations are, if you do not actually use the sodium nitrate or nitrite in the curing process, you cannot claim that those meats are cured, so that's hence the uncured label. But actually what they're really doing is grinding up celery and beets, where they get the nitrate and the nitrites, combining them with sea salt, so then you get a molecule of sodium nitrite or sodium nitrate, and then they're treating the meat the same as if you put the chemical sodium nitrite or nitrate on the meat, because a molecule of sodium nitrate or nitrite is the same, doesn't matter where it comes from when it forms that molecule. But they're charging you like 300%, you know, compared to the standard stuff.
And from a history standpoint, what was really fascinating was to find out that actually they learned, they didn't know this, but they were adding a certain kind of salt from certain areas, just salt, you know, to preserve and to flavor the meat in sausage. And it turned out that it naturally contained nitrites in the salt, you know, sort of mixed in with it. And that's later they figured out, you know, when they did chemical analysis, well, gee, this is what was preserving those dried sausages. But again, you know, if this still is a scary thing to some people, which again, I don't think the evidence is there, they can always just stick with fresh sausage, because the only time you really need to use those compounds is when you make your own and do dried sausage, and you absolutely have to do it, because or else you could end up with botulism, which, you know what, that's guaranteed to kill you.
Yeah, and a little bit of that goes a long bad way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you hit on a couple of things. And again, I talked, just gave a lecture not too long ago to Medical Grand Rounds, basically covering sort of another mythos, which is the saturated fat. But a lot of that comes down to the quality of the ingredient. So if somebody wants to get started into making their own quality sausages and picking sort of quality meats to start with, how do they go about it? Can you kind of walk them through a little bit? Because it can be a little intimidating.
Yeah, it is, actually. And first, you have to know where you can purchase the things you're going to need. For example, you can't just walk into the grocery store and buy casings, as an example. And so that's basically the intestine that you're going to stuff the meat into. So that's kind of the starting point, is make sure you've got a place where you can buy these things. The next thing is always make sure you start out with fresh meat. And so in the book, I have this whole thing on, you know, well, how do you purchase fresh? How do you know it's fresh? And so there are some tips for that, but certainly the date is going to be critical, and trusting the place that you're buying it from. And I think, you know, everybody knows that they probably bought some, whatever kind of product, but let's say meat, in a certain store, and found later that even though it was dated the right way, it wasn't as fresh as it should be. So I think trusting the source of where you're purchasing, and then being very careful with the date, and being absolutely careful with when you bring it home and how you handle it, that's kind of your starting point for making sure you've got fresh sausage meat that's going to be not just healthy and enjoyable, but safe.
Well, I think that's key. And that's one of the things, you know, folks, you know, often ask me, well, you know, hey, Dr. Mike, you know, you talk about quality ingredients and these decisions regarding, you know, the cut of meat or the type of chicken, that there's such an emphasis, such a difference on the quality. How do we do that? And you really kind of hit on it there. And that's taking your time and sourcing your ingredients. You know, as a chef, that's all about what makes a difference in our kitchen. You know, where do our ingredients come from? We want those high quality, you know, tasty bits of food. And so we spend a lot of time, the really great chefs, and I think all around the country, we've seen sort of a food revolution from chefs sourcing locally, you know, not just having a truck from Chicago or New York from a processing plant unload a bunch of stuff on the back step, as used to be done in the old days, but really getting out there and sourcing. And I really encourage folks, you know, there's a difference in the types of fats, in the amounts of fats, etc. You know, in organic, completely grass-fed beef, say one that's not fed, and even down to the types of variety, heritage breeds versus others. So I think the sourcing is really critical. But one of the things I really loved about your book also, and if you could just kind of touch on this a little bit, you really went around the globe and gave us a whole host of outstanding flavor profiles to start experiment with. Sausage is more than a breakfast link, right?
Exactly. Oh, exactly. And, you know, I'll be honest, my bias is that I just love, like, different ethnic foods. For example, I had the opportunity twice for work to go to Malaysia. And, you know, well, now you're talking about three cultures on one, pretty much an island, you know, India, China, and then indigenous Malay. And so when you taste all these flavors, sometimes actually in combinations, you know, to me, that's just a flavor explosion. So I love that aspect of, you know, of cooking and preparing foods to bring in some of these things that maybe we're not normally going to be using. You know, for example, my heritage is Italian, and, you know, I kind of grew up cooking a certain way because that's how my mom did it. So I think when you go past what you're familiar with, I think that's when you get kind of some of these interesting and just flavorful kinds of foods.
And these sausages, I think, you know, they can be part, again, if we source the right ingredients, they can not only be part of a healthful diet, but I think they can be an absolutely tasty technique, a tasty trick, if you will, to help folks break away from the modern Western diet, which is, you know, just loaded with sugar, salt, fats. Lots of these additives that we're finding can affect the gut microbiome in negative ways, and we can keep those out of things like sausages that we enjoy when we make them according to your recipes. And we can also, as I tell folks, you know, use herbs and spices and learn these basic flavor profiles.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what would you recommend? So somebody's never done it before, but they're excited. They've gone out and folks, once again, complete art and science of sausage making, 150 healthy homemade recipes from chorizo to hot dogs, actually, believe it or not, by Tony Reinhardt. You know, probably want to get like 6 copies of this book, give them to your friends for cookouts. Once you've got, they've got this, okay, they've listened to my show all the time, so they know about sourcing their beef or their pork. Okay, what's next? Do they have to buy lots of equipment?
Okay, so to me, here's the best tip. There are all kinds of different equipments that you can buy, and most people are tempted to just go out and buy a sausage-making grinder thing, you know, and they're probably like $150. But a better way to do it, because those are not good, that's not good equipment. You know, you're not going to be satisfied, especially if you want to keep doing this. The cheapest and easiest would be to buy a sausage stuffer. This is not even a this is just hand crank, and it's the stuffing unit. And go to an excellent, that you trust, a good butcher, good quality meat place, and the butcher will grind the meat for you. You tell them what you want to do. I want to make sausage. Can you grind this for me at the appropriate, you know, grind? And that's the best way to do it. And just buy a good, it'll probably cost you maybe $150 for the stuffer. So when you do that, you're going to save money to begin with, and then you're going to figure out, do I want to do this? And if you do want to do it, well, then the sky's the limit. You know, you can buy a really good grinder probably for around $500, $600. But I would really stay away from those basic, you know, like I said, about $100, $150, all-in-one kind of thing, because you're not going to be satisfied.
And what about the casings? Because that can have an important impact on, you know, the taste, the texture, and the flavor. What do you recommend somebody start with? Again, they just read the book, so they've gone to the butcher, they've got the hand grinder there, they're ready to go old school. What's the best one to start with?
Okay, so everybody pretty much uses the pork intestine, those casings, and that's probably what you're going to find more available. But if you have an objection to that, lamb is quite nice, and it is going to depend on what sausage you want to make. So, you know, because there are different size casings, even though it's not an exact science. Yeah, so that's going to be important because that will affect the something that sausage makers call the bite. So when you bite into a sausage, you know, if it's too tough, if it's, you know, those kinds of variables are really important. So, again, you know, it really kind of depends on your preference. But I would say pork is most readily available. Lamb is nice if you can find it. And then you have to make sure you're using the casing that's the appropriate diameter.
And, you know, one of the other great things about this book is you give not just the link sausage, but, you know, salamis and emulsions and all sorts. Again, for the beginner.
Stay away from the fancy things. That those are. I think you need to work up to those. For example, like a dried sausage, like salami, you're going to need to know a little bit more about what you're doing. But the easiest thing to start out with is fresh sausage. I mean, who doesn't enjoy fresh sausage? And that's just, you know, easy. Here's the recipe. Nothing fancy. Yeah, So I think the easiest thing to do is to do fresh sausage. And then you want to decide, you know, some people don't like pork. Some people don't like beef. So, you know, a nice middle ground would be something like chicken. However, you can also do vegetarian sausage. And even though, again, I don't think you need to be a vegetarian or a vegan to be healthy. That's, to me, you know, that's the, there's no evidence for that. I think it's a great thing to introduce into your diet because, again, what it does is provide some of these compounds.
Tonya, thanks so much for being with us today.